Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
That's Jimmy Stein. I'm Clint Lamb, and this is the Bama Online YouTube channel. Jimmy, first of all, it's been a while, at least you and I hopping on here and talking a little Alabama football, but spring practice is underway. You know, they've got a couple of practices under their belt. We've got to witness at least a portion of one of those practices. We've been able to talk to the head coach. We've been able to talk to assistant coaches, coordinators, players, you name it. We've gotten a chance to talk to him. So very different than it was under Nick Saban. But let's go ahead and dive right in. First of all, based off of what you saw during the, 25 minutes or so, practice period that we were able to watch, what were some of your key takeaways? I know there's a ton going on. We'll have some different varying observations, I'm sure. But what were some of your key takeaways from that limited amount of practice we were able to see?
Yeah. You know, there's a lot, it's a lot to take in, but at the same time, there's not a lot of specific bombs, you know what I mean? In terms of like, wow, this is going to blow people away. But it was a lot to take in. Here's the first thing that comes to mind for me, Clint, and I haven't discussed this at all on the round table, or with anyone yet, but you were there. So this is a great guy to discuss it with. And it's part of my own ignorance, to be honest, in terms of what I expected and saw something completely different. And I was just maybe dumb to expect this. But there's a new front seven. That's what I was super eager to see, the front seven, because the scheme is different. The defensive coordinator is different. The way they're lining up is a little different. And we didn't get to see any 11-on-11 work at all. And that's fine. I'm sure we will later on in the spring. But I expected, let me see how best to explain this, under Dave Womack's, Kane Womack, son of Dave Womack, Kane Womack's four-man front, there's going to be two outside guys that he calls Bandit and Wolf, and two inside guys, a nose guard and a defensive tackle. And I thought, because I can be wrong sometimes, I thought both outside guys, the Bandit and the Wolf, would be coached by the outside linebacker coach primarily, that those would be outside linebackers. But what we saw in the 25-minute period is the Bandit, which is an outside guy, an edge guy, though bigger, the Bandit was with being coached by Freddie Roach, you know, his group. They were the defensive line. So guys that we think will be Bandits, Keon Keeley, Jordan Renaud, LT Overton, maybe Jamarian Latham, maybe. Those guys, the Bandits, they were with Freddie Roach's group. What that means is Christian Robinson, who's the outside linebacker coach on this team, he really only coaches full-time the Wolves. That's it. That group, the Wolf. And most of the time, we gather, we won't really know until we see A-Day or until we see the games. Most of the time, he'll only have one guy on the field, you know, and Freddie Roach will be coaching three guys that are on the field. Christian coaching one guy, Kane Womack coaching two guys. Of course, Linguist coaching his corners and Colin Hitchler coaching his safeties. He'll have two to three guys. But my point is, I thought both outside guys would be coached by the outside linebackers. I was a little surprised to see that Freddie Roach coaches the Bandit, which really means Freddie Roach is coaching the same position he was a year ago, right? Because last year, Freddie coached all three guys that lined up on the defensive line, including the edge guy last year was Justin Aboigbe. We didn't call it Bandit, but that's really what Aboigbe was doing. Anyway, that's what stood out to me. I know that maybe to some that means nothing. To some it might mean a lot, but it's what caught my eye because it was the first thing I wanted to look for.
Yeah, and I can see where you would have thought that. I mean, that makes sense. You had two outside linebacker positions before, the Sam and the Jack. So it's like you would think, okay, the two outside positions now, Bandit and Wolf, you would get, one position coach handling both of those. But it's like you said, and you nailed it. It's still Keon Keeley, is really the only addition to that room other than the guys who would have already been in that room. Like, there's no outside linebackers on last year's roster that would be added to this defensive line group. So it's not like he's coaching more. It's the same types of guys. And the reason that I think that you wouldn't want to do that is the Wolf has to be able to line up off ball a ton. Like, there, so you've got to get them comfortable doing different drills. It's different responsibilities, a lot of edge play, obviously, for both guys. And that's where there's crossover. But just the fact that you also need to get those Wolves prepared to do something else. Like, it's pointless to do that with LT Overton, have him, you know, doing off ball alignments and things like that. So it makes sense when you start thinking about it that way. But I don't think that's a ridiculous take at all. In fact, I would say probably a lot of people would have assumed that. And, you know, the front is different. And with Keon Keeley, that was the big, or at least one of the big talking points from Wednesday's practice, is just the fact that he was with the Bandits. And you know, I want to say it was late January that I brought that up initially, that idea. And the more I thought about it, the more I liked it, because the Bandit is not going to be asked to move inside. He's strictly a three down edge guy. Now, granted, I'm not saying that the Bandit won't see any snaps inside, but it's not something that Womack typically wants to do. And so when you look at the Wolf and the fact that it's got to drop into coverage and line up off the ball, you look at Keeley, you don't want him doing that. You want his hand in the dirt as much as possible. Essentially, that Bandit is a 4-3 base end, and, you know, really on all three downs. And so for Keeley and his skill set, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it does. And I wasn't, you brought it up earlier before spring started. I wasn't surprised that Keon Keeley was with the Bandits. The only slight surprise to me was Bandits coached by Freddie Roach. Yeah. I thought Bandit would be coached by the outside linebacker coach. That's where I was wrong. And hey, won't be the last time I'll be wrong on the show. I promise that. But that was interesting to me. I wanted to see the makeup of the front seven. I wanted to see those guys. I still think even hiring an offensive minded coach like Kalen DeBoer, the defense becomes even more important, because, you know, the head coach gives everyone, I think, this confident feeling. Hey, the offense can be pretty good. That's why you hire Kalen DeBoer. I mean, the offense can be good. Just like when you hire Nick Saban, you know, the defense is going to be pretty good. Saban has a long history of putting good defenses on the field. Kalen DeBoer's got that same history with the offense. So I'm going to worry, and I use that term lightly, I'm going to worry about the defensive side of the ball while Kalen DeBoer is the head coach, because you got to hire a defensive guy that's going to sort of run things over that. And Kane Womack's coming from South Alabama, head coach from Group of Five school. Before that, he was DC at Indiana. So I wouldn't necessarily say he's got, you know, a resume that maybe even a Kevin Steele had, but that doesn't mean that Kane Womack is some sort of a step down. In fact, I honestly think he's a step up. The difference being that Kevin Steele has a resume that he put together over 40 years of coaching, and Kane Womack isn't even 40 years old. I mean, Kane Womack's gonna have that Kevin Steele resume plus by the time he gets to Kevin's age. You know, in my opinion, he's a sort of a head of the curve for a younger guy. But I was really impressed with Kane sticking with the defensive side of the ball. We got to see him coach. There was a drill that took place right in front of right in front of us, I think, when we were first getting there. An interesting, what looked to me, what I would call it, an open field tackling drill. It's about taking angles, about taking the right angle, about preparing yourself to make the correct hit on a back or a ball carrier in the open field that linebackers and DBs were doing together. And Kane Womack was helping coach that drill. And I was very impressed with his enthusiasm, his positivity, his teaching. Every single rep was teaching. He would stop a player on his way back to the line and explain how he could do it even better, but in a positive manner, and very hands-on, very enthusiastic. And look, players take the personality of their coach. I don't mean this as anything other than an observation and not a criticism, but Saban was focused, business-like, intense, but it was all business. And the team played like that, to their credit. I think that's why the team was so consistent under Saban, very businesslike. I think under these coaches, there's going to be more enthusiasm, more fun, more, and it's probably going to produce more big plays, more of a fun atmosphere. I think it'll be fair to maybe question the consistency. We'll see. Nothing ever goes perfectly. Didn't under Saban. But I do think there's a different personality out there that starts with a lot of teaching, but also a lot of enthusiasm. And I think the players are going to play more enthusiastically as a result.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And what I will say is if you're Nick Saban and you understand how to manage anxiety and fear and all those things, the business-like approach is very effective. If you don't know how to manage those things, and I feel like it's a much bigger problem with really just society as a whole now, not just athletes or football players, but this generation's dealing with anxieties and fears and all those things a lot more. And so I think the more fun you're having, the less fearful you are, or the less anxious you are. And I think that with this different approach with the current generation of players, it actually could end up having some benefits and could really help some of these guys. And that's one thing that I'll say. Nick Saban adjusted and recalibrated himself a ton. It's one of the reasons he was as successful as he was for as long as he was. But I think that in this new era of college football, he was a little out of his comfort zone. And even though he was making the adjustments because he knew he needed to, it was never something, it was never an area where he was super comfortable. I think with DeBoer, he is very comfortable. I mean, the playing the music, that's not him. It's not forced. It's not, you know, him trying to be, you know, hip or cool. You know, it's just he understands his players. He understands the modern times, and he connects with them more because he's younger. And that's how it works. I mean, there will be reach a point in Kalen DeBoer's career where he, you know, has a little bit of trouble with that kind of stuff too. Any coach will, but you know, I like some of the changes that are being made. And then there are going to be things that's just simply different that as a fan you might have to just accept. But you know, it was different witnessing everything that was going on. And there was a lot that you bring up the enthusiasm, you bring up the energy and the positivity. I think right now, this is not to say that the coaching staff is going to be super soft on these players. And it's going to be all about positive, you know, reinforcement and encouraging players 24/7. I don't think that's the case. But in these beginning stages, you're really trying to build a relationship. You're trying to build confidence, especially in those young players. I mean, you got a young secondary, and that's the position that we were mostly watching with those open field tackling drills. And, you know, a lot of freshmen, and you don't want them getting down on themselves or especially in front of the media where, you know, cameras are rolling and everything else. You know, I thought it was good that they were kind of going above and beyond to build that confidence. They had things to correct. But when they would get it right, they went above and beyond to make sure that player felt that they got it right. And this feel good where you start seeking doing things the correct way because of the positive reinforcement that really you're getting not only from external factors, but also internally. But with that being said, you know, a guy like Keon Keeley, he was kind of screwing up some stuff on those sled drills. And how did Freddie Roach handle it? He didn't chew him out or, you know, whatever. He told him to get back and you know, figure it out, do it correctly, pulled him to the side, worked with him a little bit. And then when he got it, positive reinforcement. And it's like, there you go, man, you got it. And I think it was very cool that we got to witness how coaching is supposed to look firsthand. Like you saw the light come on for Keon Keeley in that moment where when he did it right, he gets the positive reinforcement, and Freddie Roach is, you know, he's checked that box. He now understands how to do that drill properly and all that stuff. And I just think that it was a really cool moment.
Yeah, it's coaching, right? I mean, it's the whole title, and you see them doing a lot. And what I noticed again in that open field tackling drill, when it was the older kids that to some extent were proven. I mean, I know I'm not a coach. I don't know exactly, you know, what it is they're looking for, you know, in that drill. And we can't really hear the coaching end of it from where we stand. But my point is, when it was Malachi Moore, when it was his turn, when it was Deontay Lawson's turn, you know, when it was Devontae Smith's turn, there was a lot of positive reinforcement. There was a lot of the coach, whether it was Kane Womack, whether it was Mo Linguist, there was a lot of, yeah, exactly. That's it. And a high five. And you go back to the line like, hey, that's how you do it. And then a younger player does it. And then it was a stop. And okay, this is how you can do this better. You know, you can tell who needs the extra coaching and who was just getting you've been doing it for 4 years. I can see you've been doing this right for most of 4 years. In other words, it is the younger guys that they spend the time with coaching. And that's what you do, right? I mean, that's right there in the title. And you could see that happening. It wasn't a babysitting thing. It wasn't a whistle while you work thing. It was each rep of each drill was being coached. And it was really neat to see. Now, in terms of who stood out to me, both in with the sleds, you know, I like, you know, I'm going to be really high on Tim Smith. I think this spring and fall, he's a guy I'm really waving the flag for. I think he's going to have a big year. I've been comparing the year he's about to have, I believe, to the Christian Barmore final year, the Phil Mathis final year, the Byron Young final year, and then this recently, the Justin Aboigbe year. I know he's a little different than some of those guys, but they all had big final seasons and launched themselves into day two, solid day two picks. Maybe even borderline day one. I think Tim Smith can be that guy. He stood out to me physically as a guy ready to go. I think Damon Payne is a guy awfully close to that. I think he's a year or two behind Tim Smith and maybe a step or two behind him, but sort of in that shadow. Like, I think this is Tim Smith's year, and next year, should he stick around, it'll be Damon Payne's year. I just see kind of an assembly line going that way with the defensive line. I mean, you already knew Tim Keenan was good. I mean, he doesn't need to take that next step. I think Keenan's sort of already there. But those were the guys that stood out to me in that defensive line group that was working on the sled. What about you?
Yeah, and you know what I will say. One of the things I noticed about Jamarian Latham is he looked thick. Yeah. I mean, just and granted. You know, I was trying to remember back. I remember seeing him, but it's like, okay, was that this past season? Was that a couple of years ago? He looked leaner, and it wasn't that he looked like he had gained fat or anything like that. He just looked so much thicker, and I was really trying to remember, okay, what did he look like to me before? Because it seems like he's much bigger than what he's been, and I started thinking about it, and I'm like, okay, when you look at the body type of, obviously, Keon Keeley, he's still light. For a bandit, he needs to continue to bulk up. And apparently, according to Freddie Roach, he's put on some weight and he'll continue to do that. And I think getting him in that 260, 265 range would be really good. I mean, the comps to the former Ohio State defensive end, Chase Young, now, you know, was a number two or three overall pick to the Washington Commanders, gets traded to the 49ers, had a pretty big impact in that Super Bowl, really in the playoffs in general. But, you know, that's a guy that he's been compared to. He's in that 260 range, you know, with that on that 6'5 frame. And so that's kind of what you want for a base end, kind of bare minimum. But when you look at Jordan Renaud, when you look at LT Overton, when you look at Jeremiah Beeman, these guys, you look at them and their body types, and then you look at Jamarian Latham and with where I saw him at on Wednesday, and it's like, it's just completely different. I'm starting to think that maybe they play Jamarian Latham maybe situationally at tackle, and maybe he doesn't end up playing bandit, especially, you know, if it's asked to be a three down position. We talk about how that benefits Keeley. I think that benefits Overton. You know, the Overton's not, even though I think he was misused being wide-aligned a lot at Texas A&M, I still think he's more of an edge guy. Maybe you play him inside a little bit, but he feels like an edge bandit who can handle, at least to some degree, three down responsibilities. You know, all of these bandits, you think about surviving out there or thriving out there as a three down edge. And then you get to Jermarion Latham, and it's like, he is going to continue. If he is a bandit, he's not going to be a bandit where you have him out there in obvious passing situations out there on the edge. He will be one of those guys that they play inside in a lot of those situations. So then you start to wonder, well, if he's not going to be starting at bandit, and he's going to be, you know, a situational guy, and a lot of his reps are going to be coming inside anyways, just make that his primary position. There's no reason to really have him playing bandit. So that's something else that I thought about. I didn't know if you would notice the body difference with Latham compared to the other guys, but I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's like body-wise, it's like if you play him at bandit, he's probably going to be your best run stuffer out there. And then if you play him at defensive tackle, he's probably one of your better pass rushers from there. So it's like, you know, he can do both. He can do both, but he's probably best stopping that outside run and probably best as a pass rusher up inside. But he's the type of kid that can give you a lot of versatility. And another example of a guy who's gotten better year to year, probably because he came from a 1A school, right? I mean, like, we're going to talk about Red Morgan, I'm sure. But, you know, Red came from a 7A school. Probably shouldn't be too surprised that he picked up on things quickly and is sort of jumping into SEC play without missing a beat because he's coming from a 7A program. Jermarion Latham, the complete opposite. Now, he's into, I think this is his year four at Alabama, if not year five. And it's because, you know, it was one step at a time for him coming from a 1A program. But he is a guy that has improved. I would say he's taken a half step forward each year, if not a full step forward. And he's going to be 1 year better this year than he was a year ago. Just a good example of a quality body. And I think that's how I would describe that defensive line group. There's maybe not a superstar. There's maybe not a guy that you're going to say, hey, this guy's going in the first round of the draft next April. But what there is a collection of quality bodies that can rival anyone's. Alabama's going to play a lot of guys up front, and you're going to see a lot of quality snaps late in games because you're going to have a fresh group because the strength there is in the numbers. It's not in – maybe you don't have a Jonathan Allen. You don't have an A'shaun Robinson, but you do have 8 or 9 guys who can give you quality snaps. So it's really a good situation.
Yeah, it is a pretty good situation. And with Latham, I would like to see him take that next step if he is going to play bandit as far as run defense. You know, that was, to me, one of the areas where he was kind of a, I wouldn't say necessarily drive to drive, but when he would sub in for a boy, he would play out there on the edge. But a lot of his snaps, a majority of his snaps were just strictly situational inside. And when I saw him out there on the edge, I always thought there, compared to your other typical heavy ends, there was still something lacking as far as his run defense. And I would love for him to take that next step. If you're going to have him out there with his body size or body type, I think you're 100% correct, where it's like you would think he's going to be your best run-stopping bandit. And when you look at LT Overton, I don't see a dynamic run stopper. I personally think if everything starts to click, I think Jordan Renault is your best option there. And he's still got to prove that and take that next step. There were a lot of expectations for guys taking steps and doing things last year, Earl Little, you know, where it's like you think it's coming and then it doesn't. So I don't want to – I'm trying to be more cautious this offseason and say, okay, I do need to see it some. But when I look at that power profile for Jordan Renault playing that bandit position, I think he can be a good quality run stopper. He can be in that 260. He's already in that 260, 265 range. You can maybe even get him up to closer to 270. But very stout, strong body, and just, you know, he can convert speed to power as a pass rusher. You know, he's not overly twitchy or anything like that, but I think when you do look at that bandit spot, he's kind of exactly what you're looking for, where it's like you're not looking for the elite twitch and the elite bend. You want a quality run stopper who can survive and still make an impact as an exterior pass rusher, and I think Renault has a very high ceiling on that front. And then when you look at the next level of guys, now granted, actually, we should probably talk about the Wolf first. And we, you know, we'll talk about the offense as well. But I do, you know, with Kane Womack's defense and it just being, you know, a lot of transition, I want to spend some time on this. But the Wolf position and, you know, the guys who are playing over there, I think we all know who a majority of them are. A lot of them make sense. Now, granted, really all of them make sense to an extent, but you know, you think Quandarius Robinson, Keanu Coate, Quay Russo, I'm trying to think of some other guys that
Yanze Pierre.
Yeah, well, Yanze Pierre, you know, not to the extent of some of these other guys, but my point with those first three is just saying there was a time where we questioned, are these guys going to be an off-ball linebacker, an inside linebacker, or are they going to be an outside linebacker? And they've all ended up playing outside, but you know they had that skill set, or at least the traits, where you questioned they could end up playing off-ball linebacker. And so I think for the Wolf, that's like perfect. That's what you're looking for, and that's also why I thought that Jeremiah Alexander could end up playing in some Wolf as well, because he had that same those same questions. And the lack of length for him, being 6'1", doesn't have overly long arms to compensate for it. You know, being an every down outside linebacker where you're playing 90%+ of your snaps, 95%+ of your snaps on the line of scrimmage, that lack of length can hurt you. But I thought maybe, you know, with you spending about a third of your snaps off the line of scrimmage, maybe a guy like Jeremiah Alexander could end up playing there. But I think he's staying at Mike because, you know, out of necessity. You need experienced guys there, and you don't have a lot of experience. And some of these early enrollees, you know, they're going to take some time, and there's going to be some guys that show up on campus playing that position in the summer. And so I guess that does make sense. But from that Wolves perspective, I really like this group. A lot of very good, a lot of potential as far as your pass rush. But you also got some guys who can handle those responsibilities and lining up off the ball.
Yeah, I see it as a stack group. I mean, in terms of a number of guys that I would look forward to seeing on the field playing the games, I think it's led by Quandarius Robinson, Quay Robinson. I think he's going to have a great, great year. I mean, here's a guy who's not – I mean, it's a stretch to call him a returning starter, but he did play a lot of snaps with the ones last year. He played a lot. He rotated in quite a bit, especially considering who's ahead of him, right? I mean, he had to – you know, when he played, that meant Dallas Turner sat. When he played, that meant Chris Braswell sat. I mean, it's tough to get snaps when it's those two guys ahead of you in the pecking order. But he did play quite a bit of snaps with the ones, and he's ready. Look, there's no question about is Quandarius Robinson ready to play first team snaps. He definitely is. He looks like $1 million to me. He's not thick like Jahad Campbell thick. He's still more wiry. But, man, I think physically my comp for Quay drives people crazy because it's an Auburn comp. But physically, he reminds me a little bit of Carlos Dansby that was at Auburn years ago, where there's just tremendous length and tremendous athleticism. Carlos was a high school receiver that played defense in college and then had a long NFL career. I think – I'm not saying Quandarius is Dansby or that he's going to be a first-round pick or that he's going to have – the NFL career that Carlos Dansby had. I'm just saying physically, that's who he reminds me of. He's like a raptor out there. I mean, he's very long. He plays with great range. He's got good get off. I think it comes from being a high school defensive back early in his career. That's why he plays in space so well. And I think why he translates to this Wolf spot, like you're talking about, how there's some off ball. You have to have off ball traits to play that spot. And I think Quay is that guy, the older guy that can do that. He's got off-ball traits. He's got edge traits. It just comes from being 6'5", and being strong and where he can take on tackles, but at the same time, he can play in space. I think we're lucky to have him because he's a great bridge, because I think the younger guys will probably prove to be even better players, but they're probably not quite there yet. They're almost there. A Quay Rousseau, almost there. Yanze Pierre, almost there. But Quay and to some extent Keanu Coote, I think those two can really hold it down until those younger guys are ready. I think Robinson's going to have a big year, and I do think he's ideal for that Wolf spot, and I think he's going to be one of the leaders on this defense too.
Well, you got to think about where a majority of Q's snaps came. You know, it was in that cheetah package. And he played a lot or aligned a lot off the ball in that cheetah package. And the coaching staff felt comfortable putting him there, and he felt comfortable playing it. And so that is, you know, they completely agree with the way that the position fits him specifically and the fact that he's got some of that experience. And Alabama, prior to Nick Saban retiring, they were targeting, you know, trying to add a little bit more experience, edge experience. The Texas A&M former pass rusher who's now, I think, at Illinois. I think he joined his brother, Fadel Diggs.
Diggs.
Yeah. You know, he was a guy that they were targeting that we had heard about, the guy from UTSA, Moore. I think it's Moore.
Yeah. He went to Texas, I think.
Yeah, ended up going to Texas. So they were looking.
Diggs went to Syracuse. Is that right?
Yeah, you're right. And that's where his brother's at. I said Illinois.
He followed the coach.
Yeah.
He followed the coach. Yeah, his brother's there, and he followed his coach.
Yes, and it was always getting Illinois and Syracuse confused. But you are 1,000% correct.
Orange and dark and orange.
Yeah, that's one that I don't even feel bad about. That's just, I mean, they're at this point, they're the same team. just combine them, combine the rosters. Anyways, but I think that Q is an excellent fit. I think he's a good player. I agree with you where a lot of these other guys have a lot higher upside, but I think at the very least, it's possible that one of these young guys could step up and literally take the job from him. But it's going to be a situation, in my opinion, because Q is a good player and he's an experienced player, where it's like if that happens, they earned that. They took it. It was but at the very least, you're going to get steady play out of the Wolf position. And one thing that I will tell you is this coaching staff is extremely high on Noah Carter. I don't know if he's going to be a year one impact guy. But just based on the buzz and the excitement about how they felt about him as a high school recruit or prospect, if he proves that he is ready, he's a guy to keep an eye on in year one. And we'll just have to wait and see how he's actually developing. But I know that the coaching staff loves him. So that's somebody to keep an eye on. Wolf, I think, is going to be in good hands. One of these guys is going to step up. It could be a committee approach, I think, situationally. Like a guy like Yanze Pierre, he has the ability and the athleticism to drop in a coverage. Not as experienced lining up off the ball, but I don't think it's going to be too much of an issue getting him to adjust to that. He might feel a little fish out of water, at least for a while, but I think he would do fine there. But even if it's situationally with Yanze, get him on the field, put his hand in the dirt in some situations, let him get up to the quarterback. And I think, you know, if you simplify what you're asking him to do as he continues to grow and develop and learn, really a new system, you know, he's been at Alabama and he's already learning his second system in 2 years, like a lot of these other guys. I think he could end up being a player who makes an impact. Now, you know, we'll move more to the off-ball linebackers, and we'll talk about the fact, A, very strange seeing Deontay Lawson in the number zero, but also it looks great. I mean, it looks good. Some of the old heads, understandably so, might be like, oh, I don't like this. But I thought it looked good. It's a new era. If the board wants to give one of these players or lets one of these players wear it, sure. I thought it was strange. I had a very hard time with Jahad Campbell wearing the number 11. I looked at my roster probably three times. I don't know why I needed to do it more than once, but I'd see him going through drills and I'd be like, who is number 11? And then you realize, you know, it's Jahad and it looks good on him too. Like he's a long kind of leaner, you know, inside linebacker or off ball linebacker, and 11's kind of a leaner number, you know, so it looks good on him. But those two guys, their ability to get sideline to sideline, their ability to blitz. I mentioned yesterday on the Next Round Live when I joined those guys, I mentioned that Kane Womack at USA didn't blitz his off-ball linebackers a ton. And then I started thinking, okay, that might have been just the games that I'd watched. I need to probably go confirm that. And I will say, going back and watching some more games of his at USA, I realized that he sends them a little bit more than I realized. It wasn't quite at the rate that Alabama did. But that's something that I do want to correct myself on as far as on the record is, you know, you did see him blitz those off-ball linebackers a little bit. And so when you've got guys like Deontay Lawson and Jahad Campbell, who were both really good at that last year, that's an element that they're going to be able to bring to the table, the cover ability, the potential range, the fact that Jahad has now had 2 years to get really comfortable playing exclusively off-ball linebacker. This is going to be a really good group. When you're talking about the mic and the stinger.
I think that inside linebacker at Alabama to me is the where it st- still looks like Saban. And I'm not talking about schematic, but so much of the Saban era on defense, there were just elite kids at every spot, like almost all 11 spots, which wasn't really true. It's probably an exaggeration, but in 2016, it wasn't. In 2011, it wasn't. But there were just elite NFL first-round picks everywhere. I wouldn't necessarily say that's the case right now at Alabama, although I think Alabama's as close to that as maybe anybody else, Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, Texas. But at inside linebacker, to me, I think Alabama's as good as they've ever been. And I know that's saying a lot because you're talking about a program that produced Reuben Foster and Reggie Ragland. And
I would say at the top, I feel really good. I mean, the best, you know, inside linebacker duo in college football, in my opinion, is going to be. Yeah. But I do, Jimmy, do you have questions about the depth? Because it's not that they don't have talent as far as their depth. It's just, well, at least the last 2 years, Alabama has had a number three inside linebacker. You know, it was Trez Marshall, Jahad Campbell, and Deontay Lawson last year. The year before, Jalen Moody was a part of that conversation, along with Deontay Lawson and Henry To'o. So they kind of had some built-in, you've got a guy in case someone misses some action that you feel confident in. Do you worry about the depth at all?
I worry about the depth hugely because it's a big problem. But I'm just saying the first two guys, as good as it gets in college football and typical of the Saban era, if not even better than a lot of the Saban era. I think the world of Deontay and Jahad Campbell, I think they're elite college football players, and they're going to thrive in this new system. And they're both 1 year older and 1 year better. But boy, if they get hurt or one of them gets hurt, I mean, I'm going to have some level of confidence in Justin Jefferson because he's a senior and we both like him a lot in terms of athletically and what he brings to the table, just physically and athletically. I think we could probably, you know, be okay with Justin Jefferson. But Jeremiah Alexander, we haven't seen him in battle. We haven't really seen Jeremiah Alexander play SEC games at that position. There's reason to believe he might be pretty good. There's a lot of reason to believe he might be pretty good. But we hadn't seen it yet. And for a guy that's so into recruiting and projection, I'm still also a little bit of a show me guy. I mean, you got to have to show me. Don't just show up with hype. I want to see you do it against this level before I really believe it. But Jeremiah Alexander, maybe not ready yet. You know, the freshmen likely aren't. Sterling Dixon, Okoronkwo, you know, the young inside linebackers, they're probably not ready yet. QB Reese will be here later. A little smaller guy, but no, the depth is freshman. So much of this Alabama team, Clint, you could basically describe a lot of the team this way, right? Veteran starters, freshman backups. I mean, it's like the handful of older kids that you have on the team are all starters. The freshmen are all critical backups, redshirt and true freshmen. So that's the situation. And as a linebacker, it's like elite starters. Whew, they need to stay healthy because the drop off. I mean, seriously, I mean, people think I'm all sunshine all the time. I'm here to tell you the drop off from the starters to the depth there is a cliff.
And that's, yeah. And it's like you said, it's not a lack of talent. So if one of these guys just emerges and proves that he's capable of handling snaps, you immediately feel a lot better about it because really what you want is those two experienced guys at the position. And then you want that third guy that you could rely on. Deontay Lawson has missed a lot of time. I mean, he's missed action really in every single year he's been at Alabama. Jahad Campbell missed the beginning of last year. So if you have that trusted number three, then you feel a lot better about it. Now, what I will say about Justin Jefferson is I think he can be that. I really do. And what I think would happen is if Deontay Lawson misses time, I'm assuming Jahad Campbell, with his experience and stuff, he'd slide to the mic spot, which I think he would handle just fine. And you bring in Justin Jefferson to play that stinger spot because I think that stinger, well, he's a perfect fit there, you know, with the range and what it's asked to do. So I think that he would be good there. Where my concern comes in is I'm watching him last year all throughout the spring. And then, of course, in scrimmages, you know, open practices and things like that. And it just, he seemed to get it to me. And for whatever reason, it wasn't that, oh, he's got, you know, a lot of talent in front of him, and that's what's preventing him from getting on the field, because that's true. But you had guys get banged up, and he never felt like he was anything more than like linebacker five or off-ball linebacker five. So that's where it's like, okay, based off of what I saw, I think he can be that guy. I thought he could be that guy last year, but he wasn't. And what is that? And I can't answer that question. I have no idea. So then it becomes, there might be a piece of this puzzle that I don't know about. And until I actually start seeing him get involved, I'm going to have my reservations or at least question it a little bit. But I think he can be that guy, and I feel really good about him if he can continue to adjust playing college football at this level. And maybe that's all it was just an adjustment period. I thought he had it figured out pretty quickly, but I don't see all the day-to-day stuff. It was limited what I was working with, and that's why we always need to be careful when you are working with limited information because you don't have the entire picture. But Jeremiah Alexander, interestingly enough, in some ways, just the way that he moves and functions, he reminds me, you remember Jeremiah Trotter? Played for the Eagles, linebacker.
Sure.
Yeah.
Great player.
He was like 6'1", like 260 pounds, as a middle linebacker.
Thick.
Yeah, very thick. And that's kind of, Jeremiah having the same first name, that I guess plays into it a little bit, but it's just more of like body type, the thicker, linebacker, and just the way that he moves. And granted, I haven't seen a ton of Jeremiah Alexander playing off ball linebacker other than the late game reps against Kentucky and UT Chattanooga. And granted, he looked like he was a ball magnet. Jeremiah Trotter was a ball magnet. And granted, that was a different era of college football. And so maybe Jeremiah Alexander playing off ball now won't fit as well as Trotter doing it back in the day. But that's just something to, that's just a guy that he reminds me of a little bit. But he could end up being a good player. And some of these young guys, Sterling Dixon, really like him. He was kind of, has dropped a little bit in the recruiting rankings, barely ranked inside the top 200. I think that's okay. I think he's got some traits that are similar to Deontay Lawson. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think he's more comfortable as a pass rusher at this point, like coming in as a high school player. I think he's already a lot more comfortable with that than Deontay Lawson was. Like, that was one of the questions I had about Lawson when he was coming out of high school and really after his first season at Alabama is, Alabama was starting to implement their off-ball linebackers more in the pass rush and getting after the quarterback and all that. And I was like, Lawson just has never really shown too much on that front, but he took a big step forward this past season. And, I think with Dixon, he's got some Deontay Lawson traits, but I think he's already more advanced in that area because of his high school background.
He's wearing number 40 out there, and 40 at inside linebacker for the last few seasons has been Kendrick Blackshire. And boy, there's a step down in physicality there in size. Sterling is a typically sized true freshman linebacker.
Joshua McMillan was before him too, by the way.
He was a big kid.
Yeah,
that was a big kid
too. 40's been a big number.
And it is not now. It is now a number. I don't know if we still do this in the nutrition, but it used to be under Amy Bragg when she first got here anyway. Amy would, food was color-coded green, yellow, or red. And depending on, whether you were a weight gainer or a weight loser, you had to match your color to the color of the food that's being offered. And Sterling Dixon would be a green guy eating all the green foods. In other words, Sterling, just keep on eating. You're an eater. You're an eater. Tim Keenan, stop. You're a red guy. Stop. Sterling needs to eat your plate. You go eat, the salad. But Sterling's got to gain some weight. And I think wearing that number 40 kind of exacerbates the story because the number 40 doesn't look like that 40's been looking. But I'm really high on Sterling Dixon. I think he'll be a great player. But he's a good example of what I'm talking about that drop-off. Lawson and Campbell are as good as it gets. You lose those guys and have to play these freshmen. They're promising. I think we all remember what it looked like when Christian Harris and Shane Lee were true freshmen inside linebackers at Alabama having to start because of injury. And we all know how the story ended. Shane Lee was a quality player, particularly in the Pac-12 at Southern Cal. Christian Harris, a superstar player, and now a quality NFL player. But in 2019, they were just not ready to play SEC football, and the defense as a whole took a hit because of that. But hey, that's what happens in football. Injuries happen, and sometimes kids have to play before they're ready. And sometimes fans don't acknowledge the difference. Fans, players on the field not getting it done, they get criticized. But Some kids have earned their way onto the field because they've earned it because they're really good and they're ready. Other kids, it's just kind of thrust upon them. They have to be out there even though they're not ready. And those kids can take advantage of this. SEC football is brutal. And Saban may be gone, but that element of the SEC is not changing. If you got a player on the field that's not ready to play, he's going to be picked on, and it's going to be a problem for you.
Yeah, and speaking of weight gains, I'll tell you, are we going to let Jaden Roberts settle somewhere? I mean, he gets to Alabama a little bit bigger of a guy. They have him lose a bunch of weight because of the system they had. Then you get Eric Wolfer coming in. Then he beefs back up, or he starts trying to beef back up and get bigger. And now we're right back to, hey, go back the opposite way. Like, this cat's been a different weight by probably like 15 or 20 pounds each way about five different times since he arrived in Tuscaloosa. I'm guessing it's going
like an actor going from movie role to movie role.
Yeah, that's a great point. I just find that interesting. And we'll talk more about the offense early next week, put an emphasis on it. But let's talk about the secondary, because that is super interesting. We talked to Linguist following Wednesday's practice. I thought it was a very interesting point that he made about, you know, they're going to have a field and boundary corner. So you're going to have a corner playing to the wide side of the field, which is the field corner, and then you're going to have a guy that's playing to the boundary side. So it's a much more smaller, compact area that you have to worry about. But in these beginning stages, the coaching staff is keeping it as a left and right cornerback. And the reason for that's what you saw under Nick Saban. Granted, I think early in his tenure at Alabama, he did have some field and boundary stuff, but from really in recent years for a while, it's been left and right corner. And so there's some familiarity with the returning guys. The problem is there's one returning guy at corner. So, I mean, no one else is benefiting from the fact they played left and right under Nick Saban other than Jaleel Hurley. But what I will say is that I love the point that he made about why they're doing that. In these early stages, you can eventually get more specific with guys and figure out the strengths and weaknesses of each individual player and where they need to play, whether they're a field corner or a boundary corner. But this taking this left and right approach, it exposes all of them to playing both field and boundary corner. Sometimes if you're playing on the left side exclusively, sometimes you're to the field side, sometimes you're to the boundary side. Same with the right. And so the benefit of that is that these guys are getting exposure to both. You can identify some of those strengths and weaknesses. Maybe there's a guy you think can't handle field responsibilities, and then you watch him in practice, you know, on those reps where he's to the wide side of the field, and he's making plays all over the place, and he's got that range. You're like, okay, he can play field. But also, it prevents you from being locked in. Like, if you have a backup field corner who's not your number three, like you got your two starters, one of them gets hurt, and the guy who is your third best corner has only been playing field, and it's the boundary corner that gets hurt, now you have to go to your number four guy at least, maybe even number five, because maybe your number four corner is also on that side of the field. And so now you're looking at a situation where you're having to play lesser talented players because the guys aren't familiar with playing one or the other. So at this point in the offseason, you let them play both. They get exposure to both. And that way, from a depth standpoint, if injuries happen, which they happen quite often at corner, you can go get your number three guy on the field and feel confident in that. I think that's really important, Jimmy.
Yeah, I like the cross training. I think the cross training is critical. I thought it was the most interesting answer. I mean, that was not a coach speak answer. I mean, that was a coach telling us how it is answer. and that was fascinating. Maybe the most interesting thing we learned from the coach interviews was that very thing. And look, you know, when you lock them into boundary and field, you know, I kind of got used to the way Nick Saban was doing it. And this is why I liked the way Saban was doing it myself. I mean, I think everybody knows the general principle is your boundary corner is your more physical guy and your field corner is your quicker, faster pass defense guy. Well, you know, if I'm the offense and I know that you're playing boundary and field corners, then I'm going to throw it at your boundary guy and I'm going to run it at your field guy because you're already telling me who's better at one thing. I didn't even have to watch the tape. I know who's better at what. So I'm going to throw at the boundary guy and I'm going to run at the field guy. So, you know, I sort of like the left and right concept, where you're not giving anything away and you're telling the world, hey, in our opinion, our guys can handle it, you know, and that's why. But hey, it also comes with, you know, when you have Kool-Aid McKinstry and Terrion Arnold, I mean, you got all world guys that are pretty good at everything. That's the beauty of having the five-star elite talent is they're really good at all of it. And Alabama's going to continue to have that, you know. So Alabama's going to continue to have quality corners. Now, corner is a real question mark. When you watch practice like we did on Wednesday and you look out there and they put the ones out there, well, you know, the first group as is today, the corners are Damani Jackson, who probably doesn't even know where the bathrooms are. He just got here. Yeah, he's a junior and he started a season of college football. But let's be honest, he started on a horrible defense. I mean, USC wasn't bad. USC was horrible on defense a year ago, and he was a starter on that group. And then the other corner is Jaleel Hurley, who's not only a guy who's never played, he's a redshirt freshman. So he didn't play at all during his freshman year, didn't play a snap. And those are your two ones. Now, that's not to say they'll both be ones when the season starts. Now, I personally believe Damani Jackson is going to be a really good player. I think the transition to Alabama is going to be very helpful for him. I think having better players around him is going to improve him. And when I watched Damani, and I watched him quite a bit on Wednesday, he is a greyhound athlete. I mean, this guy has some twitch. He's also not small at all. I mean, he is a well-built NFL-looking size cornerback that just has a lot of ability. I like him a lot. I think Hurley's got a chance to be good. Hurley's biggest problem to me, Clint, isn't are you going to be any good? Hurley's problem to me is the freaks behind him. I mean, Jalen Mbakwe, Zay Mincy, and Zabian Brown, they did not show up to sit down. I mean, these guys look like future stars to me. I was knocked out, to be honest. We're going to do a pecking order. Mincy's size is crazy. You would swear he's a fifth-year senior looking at him, not a true freshman. His length is unbelievable. It reminds me a little bit of Kyrie Jackson in terms of how he's built.
But a lot more fluid.
Yeah, exactly. Just a more of a greyhound-type athlete maybe than Kyrie. Kyrie sort of always looked to me like, yeah, you can get away with playing corner, but aren't you really a safety? When you look at Zay, looked like a cornerback, even though he had that tremendous length. Maybe what's the guy, Seahawks, 49ers from Richard Stanford?
Sherman.
Yeah. I mean, I think that could be that.
I mean, that, yeah.
There could be some Zay Mincy, Richard Sherman comp there. But and Mbakwe also, I thought really impressive in the press drill they did, where he showed his punch. He's a physical dude. For a guy who played a lot of quarterback in high school, I think people will be shocked how physical Jalen Mbakwe ends up being when he's on the field one day at Alabama. But corner's a question mark for this team. There's no doubt, because Damani, yeah, he's a returning starter, but a returning starter from what? And Jaleel Hurley, he's just a freshman who hasn't proven himself. And those are your ones. So cornerback is a question mark, but I love the raw talent.
Yeah, it definitely could be a position where they target someone in the transfer. In fact, I would probably assume that they're going to target someone in the transfer portal unless one of these young guys proves, wow, this guy's really close to being ready. And then if you can make a guy like, you know, if you can get three where you feel really good about three corners, sometimes you need to work into that. But hopefully by the point you need to start working into that, some of these other freshmen that are very talented seem ready to act as the number four and provide some depth, and maybe have to step up into the number three role or maybe even the number two role or whatever, you know, temporarily, whatever it ends up being. But, from like a Kyrie Jackson, Zay Mincy comparison, it's like the difference would be, if you remember the Legion of Boom, you had Brandon Browner and you had Richard Sherman. Mincy, and this is not an exact lineup as far as skill sets are concerned, but it's just to kind of paint the picture for anybody that is familiar with those two. A lot of Alabama fans probably won't be, but Brandon Brennan was 6'4", 220, playing perimeter corner. And he, you know, just a freak athlete out there, but he was very, very physical, very physical. A little bit more stiff than some of your other guys because of that size and that length. That's more Kyrie Jackson. Richard Sherman, his length and the fact that he was so tough throwing the, you know, getting the football over with that length and all that stuff. That's very Zay Mincy to me, even though I think Mincy, you know, if he ends up being Richard Sherman, I mean, good heavens, you can't really, you might not like Richard Sherman's personality, but from a corner perspective, yeah, once you got to the NFL, there's something completely different. Red Morgan playing,
yes,
you know, getting some action, you know, we're watching drills, so it's tough. It's like, but they were calling them the ones, twos, and threes. They're like, you know, they'd call out ones, and then a group of guys would run out there, and it looked like all of the first team guys, except Red Morgan would be out there at safety ahead of Devontae Smith and ahead of Tony Mitchell. Devontae Smith dealt with some injury stuff, you know, we don't know if that's still affecting him at all. Tony Mitchell had some kind of hamstring strap, and so that could be affecting him. So it could be out of necessity that they were doing that in this practice. But, you know, Red Morgan, despite the fact that he's a lower-rated guy, and I say lower-rated, I mean, he's still – I think he's 254 overall, so he's just ranked outside of the top 250. When you talk about in-state safeties who ended up being a little bit lower-ranked, who ended up making day-one impacts over much higher-ranked guys – you look at a guy like Malachi Moore versus Brian Branch in 2020, being ranked, I think, in the 185, 195 range coming out of high school. I think Brian Branch was ranked inside the top 100 and ended up being Malachi Moore there, at least in that 2020 season. You know, you got Peyton Woodyard. I've been extremely high on him. He looks like a college-ready safety. But, you know, a guy like Red Morgan, who's a lower-ranked guy, could end up working ahead of him and end up making an impact. If that happens, I think at the safety position with what you've got coming back, what you've added in Keon Sab, I think that if Red Morgan's work with the first team, it's through he's just playing that well. And I think that would bode well for the entire, not just the safeties, but the entire secondary.
Yeah, I mean, to me, probably the biggest shock, if we want to look at who was with the ones and take it literal, which probably isn't the smartest thing to do, but taking it literally, Red Morgan with the ones has to be the biggest surprise of the day, if you take that literally. But I'm never shocked when it's a 7A kid, a kid coming from 7A football, especially an elite program like Central Phoenix City. Sometimes those kids are just more ready for big-time SEC football because they've practiced every day against other elite athletes. It's not just who you play on Friday nights, although that's a big part of it, but the kids coming from a Central Phoenix City, they're practicing against guys that football's not over for them. You know, they're going to, if you're a starter at Central Phoenix City, you're probably just going to keep on playing football. High school's not the end for you. And so kids like Red Morgan show up more ready than you think. That doesn't mean he won't get passed up. I love your Malachi Moore, Brian Branch comp there because Malachi showed up more ready than Branch, but over the course of their careers, Branch caught him and then passed him. And then Branch becomes a big deal and Branch becomes one of the best rookies in the NFL because of his upside and ability. But we have to remember that day one, Malachi was more ready. So that doesn't mean that Red Morgan will always be ahead of Peyton Woodyard or Drake Kirkpatrick Jr. or any of the other freshmen. I mean, he'll always be ahead, but it does mean that he started out ahead. And Malachi's, of course, proven to be a really good player over time. And I think Red Morgan and Malachi is a pretty good comp to one another, frankly. I mean, in terms of physically what they're bringing to the table. I think there's sort of some similarities there. Could even see Red down the road playing that nickel Husky position. But yeah, Red ahead of Devontae Smith was shocking to me. On the other hand, not too shocked. Probably with Devontae Smith, it's a fair question. Like Deontay Lawson, maybe Devontae's still getting over being hurt a little bit. Devontae's been hurt a lot in his time. And when you get hurt, it's tough to stay with the ones because you're not out there, you're not training, you're not practicing, you're not doing the 7-on-7 with the first group. So I think with Devontae, you know, if we're taking bets right now as to who's going to be ahead of who in September, I'd still go Devontae Smith over Red Morgan long term. But let's instead just choose to be excited about, hey, maybe Red Morgan's better than we thought he was.
I mean, this is two practices in. And you see a guy like Parker Brelsford working with the second team behind James Brockermeyer. That's one of Kalen DeBoer's guys. And I respect the fact that he did that. We talked about it, you and I did. And it's one of those situations where, hey, you don't want to show any favoritism. You know, most transfers that come in, you've still got to earn it on the field. And so even though you're familiar with Brailsford, you've got to make him earn it in his new environment, despite the fact that you're familiar with him. So, and you don't want to send the wrong message, like Brockermeyer has been there. Give him that opportunity to work with the first team. Maybe you can split reps or whatever. But my point in saying all that is to say, even the guys like Brailsford are having to earn their keep. And it's your two practices in. Ain't nobody earned nothing yet. And yet Red Morgan, as a true freshman, is still working with, you know, the first team in that particular drill. So what does that say? You know, maybe it means nothing. Maybe it means everything. But it's just something to keep an eye on. And I think with getting Sab, he's not Caleb Downs. He's not going to be Caleb Downs. But you replaced Caleb Downs with about as good of an option as you possibly could have. And then if you also get yet another freshman safety who's ready to contribute and make an impact, that's about as good of a combination as you could have possibly have asked for, given the loss of Caleb Downs. And so just, you know, that's some encouraging signs and something to monitor. Nothing to take as the gospel, at least not right now. Jimmy, all defense today. I mean, I guess we're going to see where this thing went. We could have spent just as much time talking about the offense, and probably next week we'll be speaking to the offensive coaches and the offensive players today after practice. And so maybe the right move was the defense this week, and we'll get to the offense next week, and we will be doing the video. You and I will be doing, you know, I'm sure mixing and matching with the staff and getting on there. Travis is doing a phenomenal job of building the YouTube channel. If you haven't already, like this video, but go subscribe to the YouTube channel. Ton of content, ton of different video stuff. Go subscribe to Bama Online. Jump on that roundtable message board with us. It's a fantastic community. A ton of information. I mean, you had a practice report. I had a practice report. Charlie had one. You had the recruiting side of things from Bone and from Joseph. I mean, it's just across the board. Content overload. And so there's not going to be anything that you're wanting to know about Alabama football right now in these spring practices that you're not going to at least see us touch on it some. And if we haven't touched on it, ask us. And I know you and I and everybody else on the staff really try to do our best to really dive into the weeds and answer the questions that we're asked. And, you know, it's fun for us. You know, we want to be a part of the community. It's not our community. It's everyone's community. And we just love being a part of it. So if you haven't already, go subscribe. And Jimmy, as always, I know it's been a little while, but I appreciate you taking some time and hopping on here with me, brother.
Of course. Looking forward to doing the offense next time.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll talk to you guys soon.